If I could have one more, that'd be good. No, they're two different. One's an outline and one's questions. Is there anybody that wasn't here last Wednesday night that needs 14? Anybody need 14? Okay.
He only got the first
page. Well, there's only...
We just filled out one of the questions.
Yeah, 14 is one's the outline and one's the questions.
I didn't get the question. I refilled hers out.
We're good. Thank you.
There's the questions to 14.
Okay, I'll do it. Neither are mine.
They're not filled out. There are two pages, one's outline and one's questions.
Okay.
Yeah, there were two pages.
I only got one.
You got the questions?
Yeah.
Well, here we go.
Oh, I guess I got one.
Okay. Okay. Let's begin with a word of prayer. Bob, would you lead us?
Sure. Lord, our Heavenly Father, we thank you for this day. We thank you for this time that we come together and study your word. We ask that you're with the teachers at this moment, that you give them a ready recollection of the things they prepared. Allow us as the students to have open hearts, open minds, open ears, as we follow along and study. We ask you to bless us each day that we're together. Bless us as family. Continue to allow us to grow. Watch over us each and every day. In Jesus' precious name we believe and pray. Amen.
So we had started chapter 14 last Wednesday night. The second section, chapter 12, the woman, the child, the dragon who is Satan. That Satan tried so hard to destroy what God had planned from the beginning. But he failed everywhere he turned. And so, being so angry, he's turned to the offspring of the woman, which would be you and I, if we lived back during that time. So in chapter 13, he has two confederates, or tools, or whatever you want to call them, that he raises up to help him persecute the offspring of the woman. And that's the beast of the sea and the beast of the earth. The beast of the sea being the persecuting force of the day, which would be Rome. And if we take the date of 96, then that would have been Domitian. The beast from the earth is the enforcer of the emperor worship. He's called the false prophet in chapter 19, and I think chapter 16 as well. So in chapter 14, we began at the end of class last week, things have been kind of on a negative note. I mean, here's the dragon. He's waiting for the child to be born so he can destroy it, and God takes it to heaven. And then here's the woman, and he wants to destroy the woman, and God takes her to safety. And, you know, it's been doom and gloom, the beast from the sea and the beast from the earth and the persecution. And so as we begin chapter 14, 12, 13, and 14 being a unit, we have this picture of the Lamb standing on Mount Zion, and with him are the 144,000 who are the redeemed. Now, if you remember, back in chapter 7, we were introduced to the 144,000 who at that time, if you remember, the judgment of God was held back until those 144,000 were sealed. So here we have the 144,000 again, and we talked about the fact that's not a literal number. Can't be a literal number. But they are the redeemed, and they are on Mount Zion. Hebrews chapter 12, verses 22 through 24, talk about the fact that Mount Zion is referred to as the heavenly Jerusalem. In other words, heaven itself. Let's just turn there. Hebrews chapter 22. Hebrews 12, 22, I'm sorry. If you're looking for chapter 22, it's not there.
There.
Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 22. But you have come to Mount Zion, and to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem, to an innumerable company of angels, to the general assembly and church of the firstborn, who are registered in heaven, to God the judge of all, to the spirit of just men made perfect, to Jesus the mediator. So it refers to Mount Zion as spiritual Jerusalem, as heaven itself. So here's the Lamb, who would be Christ, standing on Mount Zion with the redeemed, who are the saved, who have either been martyred or they've passed on or whatever. And there's this sound of harps, and there's this sound of loud voices, and these redeemed are singing a new song. And it's the song of Moses and the Lamb. And it's a song of victory. And they're singing this before the throne and before the four living creatures and before the 24 elders. Remember back in chapter 4, when we saw the great throne scene, the 24 elders who were before the throne of God and the four living creatures who served God continually. So they're singing this song of victory. And nobody else can learn this song except those who are singing the song. It says the 144,000, but the 144,000 would be the redeemed. What is the significance of it being the song of Moses and the Lamb? What would be the significance of that song? Now these are the redeemed. They're saved. They're safe. Okay, they're with the Lamb. They're with Christ. They've obtained the victory. And the song that they're singing is Moses and the Lamb. Now remember when they crossed the Red Sea, when they got on the other side, they sang the song of victory because they were safe from the Egyptians, okay? But think about it. We have Moses and we have the Lamb, right? What's the significance of the song being of Moses and the Lamb? When you think of Moses, what do you think about? You think about the old law, right? Right, the saved. Do you think about the old law when you think about Moses? When you think about Christ, what do you think about?
Salvation,
the new law, okay? So we have the redeemed. We have the redeemed of Israel. We have the redeemed in Christ who have overcome. And it talks about what they have overcome, they're the redeemed. And they're singing this song. And the reason nobody else can learn this song is if you hadn't been redeemed, you're not going to be able to sing this song, right? That's all it means. So they are in heaven, they're with the Lamb, they're singing this song of victory. So as we continue in chapter 4, beginning with verse 6, anything on what we talked about? Okay. We have these four messages from heaven. Angels announce three of these messages, and one of these messages come from a voice from heaven. And so they are announcing the victory of the Lamb over the forces of evil that are set against them. And again, the first three are proclamations of angels. The fourth is a voice from heaven. Don't know if that's an angel or whatever. But as we look at verse 6 and verse 7, John says, "And I saw another angel flying in the midst of heaven, having the what? The everlasting gospel to preach to those who dwell on the earth, to every nation, tribe, tongue, and people. And he's saying with a loud voice, 'Fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment has come, and worship him who made heaven and earth, the sea, and the springs of water.'" In other words, worship him who created all things. So he has the message of the everlasting gospel, which is to be preached to every creature under heaven. Where would we go elsewise to read that? Matthew 28, Mark 16. What did Jesus give his apostles the charge to do? Go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature, and he that believeth and is baptized will be saved. And so he has the everlasting gospel to preach to those who dwell on the earth. And he says, "Fear God and give glory to him, for the hour of his judgment has come, and worship him," who they've been worshiping? The beast, right? The emperor. The idols of the emperor. "Worship him who basically made heaven and earth, the sea, and the springs of water." In other words, all things. He is the creator time and time again. God in the book of Revelations is referred to as the creator. So he is the one to worship, and he is the one to be feared, for the hour of his judgment has come. Matthew 10:28, "Don't fear him who has the power to kill the body but can't kill the soul, but fear him rather who has what? Power to cast both soul and body in hell," right? So God is the one to be feared, not the emperor, not the Roman Empire, not the concilia or the one who's enforcing the worship. They're not the ones to be feared, because they might kill you, but they can't take your soul. So he is the one, God is the one, to receive the honor and the glory, for he is the creator who made heaven and earth and all things that are therein. And he's everlasting, right? He's the everlasting God. What's going to happen to the beast? Well, in chapter 19, he's cast into the bottomless pit, right? So God is the one to be feared. Psalm 95, 1 through 6, I'm going to read that. "O come, let us sing to the Lord. Let us make a joyful noise to the rock of our salvation. Let us come into his presence with thanksgiving. Let us make a joyful noise to him with songs of praise." Why? "For the Lord is a great God and a great King above all gods. In his hand are the depths of the earth. The heights of the mountains are his also. The sea is his, for he made it. His hands formed the dry ground. O come, let us worship and bow down. Let us kneel before the God our Maker." So, you know, all these people were like, "Oh, this beast, he's so wonderful." But when you compare this beast, this emperor, to God, who comes up short? The emperor, right? The beast. So God is the one to be feared. Romans chapter 1:25 comes to my mind, where the Gentiles exchange the truth of God for a lie and worship and serve the creature rather than the Creator who is blessed forever. So He's the one to be feared. He's the one to receive honor and glory because judgment has come. And Ecclesiastes 12, 13, and 14. I'm going to read that. We should know that. The end of this matter, all have been heard. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Why? Because God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. So this is judgment. This is not the final judgment, but it's also not a partial judgment. It's judgment on Rome. So as we come to verse 8, another angel follows the first angel, and he's saying, Babylon is fallen, that great city, because she has made all nations drink the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Which is an allusion to Isaiah chapter 21 and verse 9 and Jeremiah chapter 51 and verse 8, which talks about Babylon. And I'm going to read Isaiah. Isaiah 21 verses 8 and 9. Then he who saw cried out, upon a watchtower I stand. Now we know what a watchtower is, right? They had people on the walls. They were watching for the enemy. On the watchtower I stand, O Lord, continually by day. And at my post I am stationed whole nights. And behold, here come riders, horsemen, and pairs. And he answered, fallen, fallen is Babylon. And all the carved images of her God he has shattered to the ground. But this angel isn't talking about literal Babylon. He's talking about Rome, the oppressor of God's people. And the reason for judgment on them is because they have made all nations drink of the wrath of her fornication. Spiritual fornication, because they bowed down to the image of the emperor, to the idol. So the wine of fornication which all nations have drink, and the wine of the wrath of God which he will give them to drink. So then the third angel in verses 9 through 12 followed them saying with a loud voice, if anyone worships the beast and his image, the whole world had worshipped the beast and his image, hadn't they? Except the ones who had the seal of God. And receives his mark on his forehead or on his hand, he himself also shall drink of the wine of the wrath of God, which is poured out full strength, and we'll talk about that in a minute, into the cup of his indignation. He shall be tormented with fire and brimstone, brimstone being sulfur, in the presence of the holy angels, in the presence of the Lamb, and the smoke of their torment ascends forever and ever. And they shall have no rest day or night who worship the beast in his image and whosoever receives the mark of the beast. So this third angel is announcing doom on those who worship the beast in his image. And so those who do will drink of the wine of God's wrath undiluted. In other words, full strength. And they'll be tormented with fire and brimstone, and the smoke of their torment will ascend forever and ever. In other words, eternal damnation. So think about the fact that his wrath is coming full strength. Now, when I think of that, I go back to Romans chapter 1 and verse 27, which talks about homosexuals receiving their punishment, which was due them. So whatever that was, they deserved it, right? So there are people in this world who are punished because of what they do. But in the end, they're going to what? They're going to see eternal punishment, right? And it's going to be full strength. It's going to be undiluted. God's wrath is coming on them in full power and full strength. So, verse 12, here is the patience of the saints who worship, here is the patience of the saints who keep the commandments of God in the faith of Jesus. So he's just been talking about the vision. And remember, this is a vision. These three angels and this voice from heaven, okay? Those who worship the beast are going to be punished. How does that give the saints patience?
Knowing that they're going to receive their reward from for salvation through God. Because
right.
They're patient and keeping the course.
Right.
Staying the course and not deviating.
Stay in the course. In other words, I see what's going to happen to these people. If I endure, if I'm patient, if I endure to the end, then I'm going to receive a different reward, right? So here is the patience of the saints. Here are those who keep the commandments of God in the faith of Jesus. Patience means endurance. In other words, don't give up. Knowing the fate of those who worship the beast, that should give me patience to endure, should it not? Knowing that this is temporary, this is what's going to happen to them. I don't want that to happen to me. So that gives me patience to endure. That makes sense? So in verse 13, there's this voice from heaven. And John says, I heard a voice from heaven saying to me, write, blessed are the dead who die in the Lord from now on. Yes, says the Spirit, that they may rest from their labors and their works follow them. Blessed are those who die in the Lord from now on. From now on would include us, would it not? Blessed are those who die in the Lord. They will rest from their labors. In other words, persecution's over. Hardship's over. They're now safe. They are blessed. They die in the Lord. They rest from their labors, and their works will follow them. They'll be rewarded for their faithfulness and for their endurance. Anything so far? So, the three angels, the voice from heaven, giving reassurance to the saints. But as we come to verse 14 through the end of the chapter, we have the reaping of earth's harvest. Now, some commentators would say this is all one reaping. I think maybe different, okay? You look at verses 14 through 16. Let me just read them. Verses 14 through 16. And I looked and behold a white cloud, and on the cloud sat one like the Son of Man. Who would that be?
Christ,
right? Having on his head a golden crown and in his hand a sharp sickle. Anybody don't know what a sharp sickle is? It's a short-handled, semi-circled blade that you reap with, okay? And so it's not like something you jab down with. You're going to take a swath and you're going to cut the hay or whatever with it. So he has this sharp sickle in his hand. And another angel came out of the temple and crying with a loud voice to him who sat on the cloud, thrust in your sickle and reap. For the time has come for you to reap, for the harvest of the earth is ripe. And he who sat on the cloud thrust in his sickle on the earth, and the earth was reaped. Now, I think this is the reaping of the righteous. I could be wrong. But I think you have two reapings here, okay? Because the Son of Man reaped those who were on the earth. But then when you go to verses 17 through 20, another angel came out of the temple which is in heaven, he also having a sharp sickle. And another angel came out from the altar who had power over fire, and he cried with a loud cry to him who had the sharp sickle, saying, thrust in your sharp sickle and gather the clusters of the vine of the earth, for her grapes are fully ripe. And the angel thrust his sickle into the earth and gathered the vine of the earth and threw it into the great winepress of the wrath of God. And the wine press was trampled outside the city, and blood came out of the wine press up to the horses' bridles for 1,600 furlongs. So I think you got two reapings here. You got the reaping of Christ, and then you have the reaping of this angel. And that reaping was thrown into the winepress of the wrath of God. And they were threshed until blood ran out deep to the horses' bridles for 1,600 furlongs. Now that's not literal, it would be 184 miles. But what it does show is it shows the severity of the judgment of God. So I think we have the reaping of the saints, and then we have the reaping of those who are wicked, who worship the beast, the unrighteous, and they receive judgment for how they live their lives. Make sense? Anything on chapter 14? So let's answer the questions. Where did John see the Lamb stand?
Mount Zion.
On Mount Zion, which is spiritual Jerusalem, right? Not a literal mountain. And who's with him?
The redeemed, the
144,000. The redeemed, okay? And don't get caught up with 144,000, but the redeemed, whatever that is, okay? And who did John hear speak? A voice from, somebody said it.
A voice
from heaven.
Like many waters.
Keep in mind I'm hard hearing, okay? Just pretend that you're hollering at somebody across the room. Well, don't holler, but anyway. So what were these 144,000 doing? They were singing the song of Moses and the Lamb, okay? So who could hear this new song? Yeah, the redeemed, okay? Nobody could learn this song but them and the 24 elders and the four living creatures and the 144,000. The 144,000 were the only ones who could learn this song because it's a song of victory. And those who weren't redeemed wouldn't have the song of victory, right? So in verse 4, how are the redeemed described?
They were not defiled.
Okay. They were not defiled. What else? They follow the Lamb wherever He goes. That means wherever He goes, they're going to follow. And as we've talked about, whatever obstacles get in the way, they're going to overcome those obstacles. You know, the theme of Revelation is God wins. But we have to overcome. We have to overcome the obstacles. Okay, so all right, so they're undefiled. They follow the Lamb wherever He may go. And what was not found in the mouth of the redeemed?
No deceit.
Okay? They're no fault. So, number 6, what did the angel who John saw in verse 6 have? The everlasting gospel, right? To preach to every nation, every tongue under heaven. The apostles did that, right? What is that, Colossians chapter 1? I didn't look that up, whatever I think it is. It talks about them preaching to the whole earth, every creature under heaven.
But that also includes us now.
Exactly. Didn't stop, did it?
Right.
And does that mean in Matthew 28 applies to us and not just to the apostles? Were to go into all the earth and preach the gospel to every creature? Absolutely. So, what was he saying? Fear God and give Him the glory. Okay, for His hour of His judgment has come who made all things.
And worship God.
So what did the angel of verse 8 say? He's flying through the air and he says, Babylon is fallen, because she's made drink of the wine of the wrath of her fornication. Not literal Babylon, but who? Rome. Rome is the persecuting force of the day. All right. So what?
What was your cross reference? I got Isaiah. Was it you said Jeremiah?
Jeremiah chapter Let me go back. Because I'll get it wrong if I try to tell you. Jeremiah chapter 51, verses 7 through 10. Babylon was a golden cup in the Lord's hand, making all the earth drunken. The nations drank of her wine, therefore the nations went mad. Suddenly Babylon has fallen and been broken. And it goes on well for her, take balm for her pain. Perhaps she may be healed. We would have healed her, but she was not healed. So forsake her and let us go each to his own country, for her judgment has reached up to heaven and has been lifted up even to the skies. And the Lord has brought about our vindication. So let us declare in Zion the work of the Lord our God. So that's back in Jeremiah. Okay, so according to verse 12, what is the patience of the saints?
Oh, did I miss?
Okay. So what did the third angel say about those who worship the beast? They will drink of the wrath of God, okay, which is poured out full strength, and will be tormented how long? Forever and ever, right? And then 9, what is the patience of the saints? The previous verse, really, okay, because here's what's going to happen to them, so that should give me patience, endurance, knowing that it's going to be temporary and that they're going to be judged for what they've done. Anybody get anything different on that?
Keep the commandments of God and the faith of Jesus.
Okay. And number 10, who are the blessed? The dead who die in the Lord. You know, when this life's over, the only thing that matters is what? That we die in the Lord, where we're at. Okay? Right. They rest, why? They may rest from their labors and their works do follow them. So who was sitting on the cloud?
Son of Man.
The Son of Man, Christ, okay? What did he have on his head? Golden, well, on his head, a golden crown. What does that signify?
King.
Ruth, you have your hand up? Okay, all right. But could we conclude from that it is Christ?
Yeah.
Yeah, would think so.
He's the only one spoken of as the Son of Man.
Right. With a crown on his head, which shows his leadership, his rule, he has been crowned, going back to Revelation chapter 5, he is the glorified Christ, okay? But thank you for pointing that out, Ruth. You are right. And what did he have in his hand? A sharp sickle, right? And the angel gave him a command to do what? Thrust in the sickle and reap the harvest, for the harvest is ripe. And what did the one who sat on the cloud do in response to the angel's command? He did what he told him. He reaped the harvest. And according to verse 19, where did the angel throw the vine of the earth when he reaped his harvest? The wine press of the wrath of God. I don't want to be in the wine press of the wrath of God. You don't either. That's the way I see it. Okay. Some commentators would say different, but that's the way I see it. It makes sense to me. Okay. So what, according to verse 20, came out of the wine press? Blood. And how much? Just a little? A lot. Okay. That's a lot of blood. Yeah. And again, this is a vision. Okay. It's not literal. We can't see blood bridle deep for 184,000 miles or 184 miles. It shows the severity of God's judgment and what's going to happen to those who oppress his people and who are unfaithful. So, questions, comments, anything? Sometimes I think I'm doing too much talking and don't give you a chance to do what you need to do. Okay, so Chapters 12 through 14 are a unit, okay? In chapter 12 and 13, the adversaries against God are identified. The dragon, Satan, the beast of the sea, the emperor, the oppressing party, and the beast of the land, which would be the one who enforced the worship. In chapter 14, the saints or the people are reassured of victory. Victory is coming. The vision of the Lamb and the 144,000. The proclamation of the angels. The voice from heaven. Giving them encouragement that victory is going to come. So the hour of the judgment has come, verse 7. Babylon is fallen, verse 8. The drink of the wine of the wrath of God, full strength, in verse 10. And the wicked thrown in the great winepress of the wrath of God, in verse 19. So the full outpouring of God's wrath is about to be poured out on Rome. So we come to verse 16, we see that. But first there's this interlude, this introduction, whatever you want to call it, to the pouring out of the seven bowls of wrath in chapter 15, because the seven bowls of wrath are poured out in chapter 16. Now we're going to take 15 and 16 together for two reasons. They go together. And 15 is only eight verses. Eight verses is the prelude to the pouring out of the seven bowls of wrath. And then chapter 16 is the pouring out of those bowls. So when we think about the seven seals, the seven seals reveal God's judgment that is going to come. And then you remember the seven trumpets. So the seven seals reveal God's judgment. The seven trumpets warn that God's judgment is coming. The seven bowls of wrath are the execution of that judgment. So just something to think about and get in our mind. So next Wednesday night, we'll start on chapter 15, and we'll tie 15 and 16 together with the final bowls of wrath, which, and when the seventh bowl is poured out, God's judgment will be complete. So thank you for your attention, and we'll continue that next Wednesday night. Thank you.